Mark chapter 14. If you would like to honor the Word of God, you may do that now. And being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious. And she broke the box and poured it on his head. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, "Why was this waste? Why was this waste of ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor." And they murmured against her. And Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why trouble ye her? She hath wrought a good work on me. For you have the poor with you always, and whensoever ye will, you may do them good, but me ye have not always. She hath done what she could. She's come aforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her." Return with me to verse 8, the very first phrase. The gospel according to Mark said, quoting Jesus, "She hath done what she could." I want to take a text from that tonight and ask thus the question, are we doing what we can? Are we doing what we can? You may be seated. Tonight, join me in the great city of Jerusalem as we begin to walk outside of the gates of Jerusalem. We want to go to the southern part, walk outside the gate. There you will find an olive orchard. And in that orchard is a garden that is known as Gethsemane. Also nestled the edge of that olive orchard is a village that is called Bethany. And in the city, or the village of Bethany, is a home there whose occupant is Simon, known as Simon the leper. If we were to try to put a time on it, it's just about 6 days before the Passover. It is very near what we know as now as the Last Supper. Then it was the Feast of the Passover. It's getting very close to the time of the crucifixion of Christ. And there in attendance at Simon's house, Jesus is there. And often as it was, he was probably surrounded by his disciples, his entourage that often went with him wherever he went. Also in attendance would have been Lazarus, Martha, and Mary. If you would join me as we go out of Jerusalem through the outskirts of the Mount of Olives and into the village and approach the house of Simon. If you would begin to listen, you would probably hear the mumbling of various conversations as they are going on at one time. There would probably be times that you would hear just one voice and everybody else gets quiet as one voice speaks. There would probably be times of the noise of laughter would lift. There would probably be times of seriousness as we have the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords occupying this house. He is the momentum of attendance. He is the great guest, this Jesus. We look at this, and if you were to continue to approach Simon the leper's house, you would probably begin to smell odor, the odor of kindling wood burning. You could probably smell meat cooking. You would probably smell the hint of bread baking. Man, what a sight it would be. If you were to walk on in, you would probably, knowing her nature, look at an elder sister by the name of Martha with a very concerned look on her face. She is probably red, probably sweating, busy preparing a meal because she was somewhat accustomed to getting cumbered about with much serving. You would probably find Jesus in possibly another section of the house and probably gathered around him, surrounding him. You wouldn't necessarily find people pulled up in a chair at a table, but probably actually reclining as the custom was on that day, back on their right elbow. Probably being served one item of food at a time. We look at this, and we've talked about Martha and her busyness in the kitchen. We've talked about the fellowship that's going on. But if you would join me and place your gaze at a certain section of the room, there approaching the room where Jesus is at, is someone whose eyes is probably cast down, who may have already have tears in her eyes. In her hand is a valuable container. And within the valuable container, it's very valuable ointment, very costly. It could be a gift that was given to her from her father. It could have been her possible dowry. It could have been an heirloom. But it was probably something that we can all assume is safe to say was something that meant a lot to her. It meant a lot to her. And probably as she begins to hold that alabaster box with spikenard on the inside, I imagine as she begins to approach the room, that there is probably silence that you can nearly cut with a knife fills the room. Probably all gazes that was going in all different directions and possibly to Christ. All the attention probably is focused on her as she approaches the Christ with something that means so much, that is so valuable. True worship's going to cost you something. True worship's going to cost you something. And there she comes to Jesus. And she breaks the alabaster box. And the ointment that could have been sold for 300 pence was poured on the head of Jesus. Worship. 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 As she comes with conclusive actions, she comes with serious motives. And to come to not partially do worship, but to find complete worship. And she breaks the vessel called the alabaster box. And that thing that is so valuable to her turns it up on the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. She is probably not saying a word, but with tears in her eyes, the drops of spikenard that begin to drip from her broken alabaster box. With every drop, it may be silent in the room, but in silence it screams, "Jesus, I worship you. Jesus, I worship you." You understand that to go to such great lengths and to go to such extreme measures, She is recognizing Jesus Christ as that Messiah that has been prophesied to come to her people. She has found an opportunity of worship. And now that she has found her opportunity of worship, she does not want the opportunity to slip by her without letting him know. Without letting him know that I believe in what you're teaching. I believe that you are the Son of God. I believe that you are the Messiah. So here I come with my alabaster box to recognize you, to break down in front of you, to humble myself to you, to submit my desires to you, to take my alabaster box that is precious and say, it's all you, God. I will not hold back. I will not hold to a reserve, but it's going to be all or nothing. And so I don't plan on putting the top back on my alabaster box. I don't plan to put a seal back on it again. I don't plan to put it back on the shelf again. But I'm going to break what's valuable to me to look, put you to the place you need to be in my life. And what's so incredible is that the Jesus that knows her ups and her downs, the Jesus that knows her strengths and her weaknesses, the Jesus that knows every fleeting thought that runs through her mind, the Jesus that saw the day she was born, the Jesus that looks down the lane of time and knows the day she departs, is so pleased with her worship. The very King of Kings that has created beast that surrounds the throne of God, that cries holy, 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 that has created beings for no other purpose but worship. That same God made in man's form is sitting with oil spikenard dripping from his head now. But he is so pleased. He is so pleased with her worship that he makes the grand statement. She has done what she could. Oh, to God that he could look down at Broxton Count Meeting this week in 2013 and see people that has made a sacrifice, that was willing to go the extra mile, that was to say it's going to be all or nothing. Oh, to God that he could look at us this week and see worship. And I hope he could be pleased enough with the praises of our lips, with the meditations of our mind, with the murmur of our heart, that he could say they have done what they could. For a God whose spirit still walks down alleyways into bar rooms, into hotel rooms, into crack houses, and to the various uttermost evil places of the world, and sees value in people that others have gave up on. But I want that King to look at my worship tonight. I want him to see my heart tonight. And if I could get it to the place that God would be pleased with my worship. You understand that for the most of us, we have grew up in this stuff. If we really serious about a move of God, we know what it takes to have a move of God. If we want the Spirit to move in the altar, we know the recipe of what it takes for the Spirit to move. We are not ignorant. We are not unlearned. We are not in the dark on how to have revival. We do not sit and don't move because we don't know it. We don't sit silently because we don't know how to worship. We don't sit quiet because we don't know how to give God praise. But we know what it takes to tell God, I recognize you for who you really are. And if I've got to worship by myself, I will stand. I will lift my hands and I will worship. I will focus on what the service is doing. I will be sensitive to the moving of the Spirit. Oh, to God, that God could say they have done what they could. We look at this tonight. We look at it. The alabaster box. Alabaster is a species of marble. It's somewhat transparent. And it's most common used to store spikenard or perfume, some type of ointment. There's a seal on it. So the scent that's on the inside, that the scent that's on the inside will not escape until it's broken. It's designed to preserve. It's designed to withhold. It is designed to have boundaries. It hangs up the scent on the inside. If you would look at the alabaster box, it's a nice visual whatnot. Let us place it upon the mantle and let us sit back and behold the alabaster box and be so proud of the way that it looks and be so proud of it, the way that it looks, that we stand in our pulpits and we brag about how good it looks. And we walk away because we just simply looked and we're proud. And we have our moments of joy when we look at the alabaster box, and because it looks so good, we pacify the spirit and say, I must be all right. But the alabaster box never reaches its greatest potential. The alabaster box never does its greatest work. The alabaster box never accomplishes its greatest goal until it is. Preacher, can you tell me why that people who has been in the church with a form and a fashion for so many years can have such a bad spirit? Because they're simply an alabaster box that is yet to be broken. And it just sits on a shelf somewhere saying, look how pretty I am. How is it that people that has been indoctrinated with clean, holy living, but never have a desire to step outside and to do outreach and to go into the community and go where the drug addict is at and go to where those that can't help themselves, and they content with staying in the four walls of a church and don't want you to disturb or bring anybody else inside that's going to disturb, that's going to mess with our routine? How can that be, preacher? Because they're just an alabaster box that is sitting on a coffee table somewhere and saying, look how good I look. How is it that we can have men and women that look the part, but they'll jump on the phone in a minute's notice and they run down every evangelist and preacher they can get a hold of. How can it be? It's because they're just an alabaster box that has not reached their fullest potential yet. But I preach hope to you. Those same people with those same attitude, if they will fall in the altar of worship and break themselves at the feet of Christ, it will change them. How will we ever have revival? How will we ever have a monumental camp meeting? It's when we decide to worship Him and bring what's most important to us and break it, break it, break it at His feet. We look at this text tonight. It is so filled with instruction. We understand that Mary breaks the alabaster box and she experiences worship, but she does it alone. She does it alone. She doesn't have anyone. Come here, Brother Donnell. Get on your knees at the altar. She doesn't have anyone that says, come on, Mary, break it. Oh, we behind you. Break it. Go on and pour it out. Break it. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Pray till you pray through. Pray till you get a breakthrough. Not this worship. Listen to me. This most greatest moments of worship that I have ever experienced myself was when I have been by myself. My greatest in times with God has not been when the brethren gathered around me and encouraged me, but when God has done His greatest work in me was when I was willing to get my alabaster box where nobody else could hear me and nobody else could see me and nobody else is seeing me as a preacher. And I've got to get my will and what I want to happen and my emotions and my thoughts and my goals and my hurts and my frustrations and break it at the feet of Christ. Am I doing? Are you doing? If God was to look at your worship tonight, could He say? Could He say the God that never lies? Could He say you have done what you could? Could my God be pleased with me when He examines my worship? Could God be pleased with me when I'm seeking His face for a message? Why? And I was praying one time, and this came to me. I think I told you about it. As a younger preacher, I'm not old now, but as a younger preacher, I was scheduled to preach a meeting. And I was at our home church, wasn't during the service, during the day. And I was walking up and down the middle aisle seeking God, please anoint me tonight or whenever the meeting. Give me the message, give me the message, give me the message. And a little voice said to me, why is it that you want God to move where you preach? Why is it that you want God to move where you preach? The right direction with the wrong motive. The right direction with the wrong motive. And so I had to back up. I stopped praying because I had to think about that thing. And so I had to back up and say, God, if I don't schedule another revival from this, if I don't schedule another meeting from this, and nobody pats me on the back and says, you preach good,
then God anoint me to help those people. What was you doing, preacher? God, are you pleased with my worship? I may be hollering, but why do I holler? I may sit with the preachers, but why do I sit with the preachers? I may holler real loud, but why do I holler real loud? I may come to the altar where everybody sees me coming to the altar, but why am I coming to the altar? Oh, God, please be pleased. Please be pleased with my worship. Oh, Lord, please accept my worship. There was some that had indignation against her that said that she was wasting. She was wasting. She was wasting. But Jesus Christ, the Creator, was so impressed with her worship, He says, leave her alone. Leave her alone. Oh, to God, that my worship would be so pure that God would look to the imps of hell while I try to break my alabaster box and says, hush, He's come to worship. Hush, He's come to worship. Hush, stand back. Why do you trouble her? But someone with pure worship worships, number one, by herself. Pure worship, number two, worships when everybody else stares. Number three, pure worship happens when others are making fun and murmuring and complaining about what the service is being interrupted with. Oh God, may my mouth hush. May my mouth hush. And let me go get my alabaster box before I lift my hand or my voice to someone else that's trying to break theirs. Somebody come to the piano. I got to bring it to a close. Oh, man, there's so much more preaching than this. Maybe we'll get it later on the week if it be the God's will. But the question that I'm asking the evangelist or the preacher here, have I done what I could? I'm not just asking me, but if I could come down where you are tonight and sit down with you like I sit down in your living room and I look you face to face and you would look over your worship to God as it has been lately. And question you about your approach to the King of Kings. And ask you about how you boldly come to the throne of God. And ask you, have you done what you could? Have you done what you could? Oh, God. I can't just look at you, but I look at me. And I'm comparing myself to Mary. As this preacher that tries to step in the pulpit and proclaim the gospel. As this preacher, he's got a few miles on him, not a lot, but a few. And look at my prayer life. and look at my dedication to ministry and look at my study of the Word and the control of my mouth and the control of my mind and the control of my spirit and say, have I done what I could? When I have loved ones that is lost and undone without God, and if they don't turn, they're going to bust hell wide open. Have I done? Have I done what I could? When I've preached in churches that's struggling to stay open, and as the evangelist, when I come to preach a meeting there, have I done what I could? Can the King of Kings and God Almighty Himself say, He's done what He could. Would you stand? Just to let you know tonight, the altar's open. Why don't you grab your alabaster box and come on down?